I was talking to a client the other day who's assessing a country property with us, and they were saying in their city property, they were approached to sell, and they said it was our dream home that we built, not interested. Then this person came back with a better offer, and they said, no, we are seriously not. He said, by the time they knocked the third time, we'd actually started thinking, well, if we left here, where would we go? And then the third time they came back with such an obscene offer, obscenely good, we were ready to go then, and we accepted it. And I think it's a lesson to us all as agents that it's a way perhaps that it's communicated, and you certainly don't want to harass anyone. But sometimes it's just about being patient and people coming around to the idea that, okay, I do want to go, and what number will it be? And you get there eventually.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry, sales professionals, property managers and leaders. We bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. Now, here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Today, my guest is Deborah Cullen, a prestige residential partner and head of brand relationships for Knight Frank Australia. She's also a part of the Global Prime Residential team and works closely with the group's international offices to find the perfect buyer for her portfolio of prestige properties, ensuring the best market price is achieved, as well as fantastic customer service for very discerning clients. So welcome to the show, Deborah Cullen.
Thank you so much for having me. Lovely to be here.
Yeah. So we originally met at the launch of last year, the Knight Frank Prime Residential Global Outlook.
That's right.
Over at the display suite for Crown for One Barangaroo, which are amazing. Every time I think about that, I think about myself living my best life.
You're not the only one.
And I can't believe how quickly it's taken shape too since then. Like, you know, it just seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
I know. On the skyline, it's just rising up, isn't it? It's just beautiful. And it's so nice to see it from all different places in the city now.
Yeah.
It's actually on the horizon skyline.
You can see the movement in the building.
Yeah.
So what's happening over there at the moment?
Well, Erin and her team, obviously, they've got a lot more interest and more apartments to sell. That area is, and the whole precinct is just so vibrant. And it's such a great entertainment hub. And I think people are really excited about it finally taking shape and moving in. So
yeah, I think we'll continue to be so. I mean, I don't know why this stuck out to me, but, you know, being able to order from all of the restaurants that are in there, like, you know, no more yes. Uber Eats, it's all there.
It's all there, yeah. Like, signature restaurants are all there.
Yeah.
And there will be more in that building, obviously, as well, once that opens. So
yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
I can't wait. Sydney is very, very lucky to have such an awesome landmark there like that. Yeah. Now, let's talk about you. You're originally from New Zealand.
I am. I'm a Kiwi girl. I came over, and this is going to give my age away, but I came over in 1984 with my husband, not then my husband, but we married here and have had children here, but family is still back in New Zealand. So we go between the two. We're pretty lucky to have, you know, the opportunities to travel easily across the Tasman. And so originally I followed him over, actually. He had a business opportunity and was very young then.
Yeah. Well, I read somewhere that one of your first roles was at Fitness First as a trainer.
Yes.
So how did you get into real estate? Did you choose real estate or did real estate choose you?
That's an interesting question. I think I always had a love of property, like most Australians do. And in fact, our colleagues in England are surprised constantly how big ownership of property is for Australians compared to the British public. But yes, I was at actually a dinner party of a friend who owned an agency, and I was looking to get out of fitness, and he suggested, why don't you give it a go? And I loved it straight away. I worked actually with another female broker. We worked in a partnership together, and we worked together for quite a few years. We sort of instantly moved through, I guess, through into other agencies where we were a bit more boutique, which we really enjoyed, and on the Northern Beaches side, which is where I live. Yeah, it was just, it just seemed a really great match, because I think the skills are very transferable. If you are in a customer service based industry and you are good at dealing with people and empathetic and you listen, I think it's really easy to transfer those skills and then learn the rest as you go along.
Absolutely. And you're also a stock and station agent as well as being a regular real estate agent.
Yes.
So you swap the heels for sneakers.
The RMs.
Every now and then.
The RMs, yes. Well, that kind of evolved, actually. I was selling some properties. A client asked me to sell one of their properties in the Southern Highlands, and it kind of moved on from that. And it was, I love doing the country properties because once it's a chance to get out of the city and people are really lovely and real in the country. So I certainly like that sort of side of it. But very quickly, I was asked to look at other things. And of course, from a legal requirement, anything over 50 acres, you need just a station license. So I thought, well, I'll go and do that. And a lot of people laughed at me about wearing my high heels out in the paddocks and things like that. But I actually really genuinely love doing it. And now, as part of my portfolio, because at Knight Frank we look after city, country and coastal properties, it's a natural fit to be able to do those country properties. And usually they have our luxury home component. They're not a rural asset we're actually selling. But it is about understanding the land and the improvements to pastures and, you know, cattle and equine and those sort of things and understanding what goes along with them. So it's good fun.
Yeah. Before you came in here, I was looking at some of your listings, which are amazing. Everything from the Eagle's Nest in Collaroy with a price guide of, I think, around $10 million.
Yes.
To some beautiful, beautiful farms in the Southern Highlands and other places.
Yes.
How did the specialisation in luxury property come about?
That kind of evolved actually as I moved along, and I think it just you naturally find perhaps where you're comfortable and what you like doing. Before I was at Knight Frank, I was at Colliers, and I was doing lifestyle estates then, and I was actually hired to do that, to set up that team. So it was very much about the properties that you retreat to from your city residence. That's how we've kind of grouped it together. Maybe I should just backtrack. For me, it starts with the client. And so we don't go out and prospect for property or listings per se. It's about understanding what our clients have and how we can help with their portfolio and what they want to add to it or perhaps let go out of it. So we work with their private bankers, their accountants, their tax advisors, insurance agencies, all those sort of things to help clients in that sort of high net worth sector look after their residential and commercial assets, because of course Knight Frank being a commercial agency as well, we can look after the whole lot. And it puts us in quite a special space.
Mm.
So then it is about understanding what they're looking for. So they will tell me if they want a particular country property that they're looking for and what their requirements are. And sometimes it takes a little bit of time to find them what they want. But that's part of the joy in doing it as well. So it's actually the relationship with the client and working through that. And I think, whilst I don't want to bring gender into it, I think that's what women are actually really good at doing. We're actually good at working through that relationship with, because it's all about family. The properties that we sell are all about where their families gather and where they want to entertain, relax, go off the grid, whatever it is. And I think, you know, we can work through that relationship side and get the best outcomes for them. And there's no hurry to it sometimes. It is about just finding the perfect match.
Yeah, there's a really good lesson in there, I think, for residential agents who are sort of selling homes like day in, day out, just regular homes, in that what you're doing is you're looking at the client holistically from a wealth portfolio kind of angle.
Yes, exactly.
And I think the great Josh Altman actually said, if you make someone money, you'll be on their speed dial for life.
Yeah, it's exactly true. We use that like in our London office, the trusted advisor kind of tagline.
Yeah.
Because for us, we want to be the first point of contact. If our client wants to do anything with regard to property, they call us.
Yeah.
And if we don't have the specialist within the residential team and it's in a commercial asset or it might be an industrial one or a leasing one, we have somebody within our building that can help them. And so, well, one, we keep the fees in-house, which is great, but also we keep the relationship in-house and we make sure that's protected and nurtured. So they feel that Knight Frank are the specialist in every sort of sector, but we also are then part of their family. So you might have seen as well on our social channels and things like that, we have a lot of events and we have private lunches and we do beautiful things like drive days and things like that. But that's about us having more time with our clients to understand where they're going to go this year. What do they need to do? How can we possibly help? Or who can we introduce them to help them get to that desired outcome? So it's a little bit different way of working. I love it because for me, it's about the relationships and that's what I find a lot of satisfaction in working with. So I think, you know, it's a different part of agency and it's quite a specialized sector. But I think now with the high net worth client base growing in Australia so much that it is. And we're in particular seeing that private banking and family office sector really growing as well. I think it's a perfect sign that this is a part of an agency that will grow in time, specialists for this space. I don't think it would be a bad thing to have more women doing that, do you?
No, I think I can't imagine one that wouldn't want to come and work in your team. It sounds fantastic. Actually, just talking about the growth in high net wealth individuals. So the latest Knight Frank Australian Prime Waterfront Index showed that harbourfront homes are worth up to 97.3% more than properties along rivers and canals or the coast.
Yes.
Unfortunately, there's not a lot of them, and I'm sure that demand way exceeds supply. So how do you market for high buyer demand?
Well, I think, you know, you're seeing a lot of trend at the moment of private transactions happening off market, and we're certainly doing those as well. And they're ones that we don't talk about, and they are very confidential. I think now a lot of clients will, and we're finding this, is that I'd really love that property and I'd love it if, could you approach them and see if they'll sell? Or I'll wait for that one because that's the one I want. So you're right, there's a limited demand, isn't there, around the harbour? Mm. And certainly from a stock point of view at the moment, from a public campaign, there's not a lot on the market, but the ones that are transacting, I think it's you can never be too cheeky as an agent just to at least ask if you're considering selling, and that we have somebody quietly who would like to assess it, and you know it won't be talked about, and that's what we try and do sometimes. That's all we can do, because aside from things like Wamberangaroo, which are building, you know, beautiful residences in the sky, there's a limited amount of land that can be built on. So,
yeah, and it's very true. It's a simple equation. If you don't ask, the answer's always going to be
right.
No.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? I was talking to a client the other day who's assessing a country property with us, and they were saying in their city property they were approached to sell, and they said it was our dream home that we built, not interested. Then this person came back with a better offer and they said, no, we are seriously not. He said, by the time they knocked the third time, we'd actually started thinking, well, if we left here, where would we go? And then the third time they came back with such an obscene offer, obscenely good, we were ready to go then and we accepted it. And I think it's a lesson to us all as agents that it's a way perhaps that it's communicated, and you certainly don't want to harass anyone, but sometimes it's just about being patient and people coming around to the idea that, okay, I do want to go, and what number will it be? And you get there eventually.
Interesting.
Never say no.
Yeah. And never give up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So let's talk about some of these beautiful places that you're marketing, and particularly Collaroy. Like I looked at that and sort of thought, well, if I had to say no to Wamberangaroo, I'd definitely want to go and live in the Eagle's Nest.
It's, yes.
You know, overlooking the beach and just beautiful.
Yes.
How do you go about putting together a marketing plan for those types of high-end listings?
No two are the same, I suppose. We have a part of it, which is the digital and print media, which we sort of keep relatively similar. But we're bringing some new things in this year. We're doing a lot of work with CEO Magazine, and we're doing stories. So we decided to showcase it in that, and actually Wamberangaroo is in there as well. And actually a piece about Knight Frank, because it's International Women's Day, of course, soon.
Yep.
So we've got a lovely piece about the senior women within the agency as well. But what we're trying to do is engage a different kind of audience. So that goes out to their subscription. It's a digital and a print media story. So we're doing that sort of campaign within the actual publication. They share it, of course, on all their socials and that sort of thing. But we've already done a private lunch with Bentley there, where we actually invited some high net worth clients along and for private tours. And we had a beautiful drive with Bentley up to Palm Beach and back, which was really nice. And then a lovely catered lunch. We do things like that. We introduce people through who might not know where Collaroy is.
Mm.
Might not know about this home. Locals certainly do. Locals have been watching this place being built for the past 18 months, and it's a phenomenal home. It really is. It sits right on the edge and views right up to the Central Coast. It's just incredible. It's also where it sits is actually quite heavy bushfire regulations there as well. So it's got fire curtains, and it's bushfire proof, which is kind of a bit topical, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely.
But also the windows are cyclone proof. Like, it's been absolutely beautifully built for the location and the elements, the natural elements that it sits in. So now it's about telling that story of what it's like to live there and getting it out through as many. We do a lot of digital media because we try and do beautiful films with our properties.
Mm.
They have a lot more longevity out in the market. But also it's a great thing to send the private banks and the trusted advisors and financial advisors and all those sort of things. It's easy to share a link of a film, so much easier than sending out a brochure and things like that. But I have to tell you, we launched, and my first inquiry was within a minute.
Yeah.
And it was somebody from the tech industry.
Yeah.
A young, wealthy entrepreneur who was obviously surfing at the time on the net.
Yeah.
And bang, straight away. So now it's about working our way through the inquiry, because of course not everyone's got the dollars that we need. It's about being respectful of that, but then doing private inspections, and they all private inspections. We set aside time that everyone has they're not rushed through the home. We might give them a glass of mineral water, a glass of champagne or something like that, especially for the early evening viewings, and let them just sit there and feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine that that would definitely work for me.
We don't do open homes. I guess that's what I'm saying. We don't do open homes for those kind of properties.
Yeah, we're not talking just your standard open for inspection with a couple of jats and some cheese cubes.
No. There's not, very rarely, actually, do our clients even want signboards. It's a different way of selling, and it's quite discreet and elegant. And
I was going to say that because I did have down to ask you the right types of attention, because I'm sure the types of properties you're selling are celebrities and high net worth individuals that often don't want the attention put on them. So how do you balance that?
It's difficult sometimes because I think controlling information out in the market is actually really difficult now. Controlling privacy is very difficult. We do the best we can. I think that's kind of it. The place at Collaroy, the people who have built that are locals. They're very, very private.
Yeah.
They don't even want their names to be mentioned. They're happy for the designer to be mentioned because it was his vision when he saw the site. So we take that path of talking about the design and we keep their interests private. Other people are quite happy to be out there, and we've even had some clients say, can I be in the video? Everyone's different. And I think it's about asking the questions. So seeking to understand on what's important to them about what people do know and don't know, and just trying your best to protect that. And within our business, we also run on a separate system to the rest of our agency. So our details are kept confidential and private. So it's certainly, we're very mindful of that private and personal side of people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Obviously with these high-end listings, what you just described there is very labor intensive for you, like as in personal inspections and organizing events and things like that. How many listings are you able to carry at once, and what sort of a team have you got around you?
It does range. Probably it's usually 10 to 12 that we have on and off market that we're looking after at one time. I'm really lucky that I have a great support structure within our business. So we have in-house admin, marketing, PR teams that do all of this for us. So really, I concentrate on the client.
Yeah.
And they are so helpful. And they are an absolute godsend. You know, when one of them goes around holiday, it's kind of like, oh. Yeah. But, you know, we have backups in place. We're big enough that we can do that. And I think because it's part of Knight Frank's DNA and the rest of the world, how we work this way. So we are really lucky that we've got a lot of British people in our office who are used to working in the London office and bring all of that knowledge with them of how to work. You know, when you have that kind of educated support network, it really makes a difference. But I think it's about being authentic too. And it's about saying to people, I can't represent you right now. You know, you'll have to wait and do it in the next couple of months, and we sort of timeline that because I think everything, we have to do it justice in order to get the result. The country properties do take a little bit longer to sell, and we're mindful of that. And depending on how far away they are, I might work with a local agent in conjunction with them. So we have the flexibility then of having somebody locally on the ground. And that does help too. Sometimes the client just wants you. And so we put a higher fee attached to that. And we do it that way. So, but it is about the high net worth sector does like six-star service and they expect it. So they're happy to pay a higher fee. We're not happy to, but it's a stretch. But they do pay a higher fee.
They see value in it.
Yes. Yeah. And so we're not the 1% agents, you know. We're full fee for what we do. And we own that. That's our space.
Are there any particular property features that high net worth individuals are looking for at the moment? Like, are you seeing different smart homes or...?
I think people have gone through the smart, not too smart, I think is the key.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can have too much tech that you see people glaze over. Depending on the demographic of age that you're dealing with, the younger audience, they're usually fine. But once you're getting sort of to the over 50s, my age, over 50s, I'm a person who just loves a key.
Yeah.
I really do. A key to open the door. And I'm happy to have a bit of tech, but not so it overwhelms the house and you don't know how to do anything. Or, you know, quite often what we get asked is, but what happens if there's a blackout? You know, what backup systems are there in place? And some people feel quite nervous about that. So I think too much tech can sometimes be daunting.
Yeah.
But look, I think for us it's more about the location, I think, people are looking for rather than the home. They always feel they can change the home a bit, but it's the location and the outlook and privacy. Privacy is a big thing right now for a lot of people. But no property is ever perfect. I remember selling an amazing property down on the harbour, this fantastic pool, and the guy who bought it said, but I want the pool to wrap right around the house. Can I make the pool wrap around the house? I'm like, you can do whatever you want, you know, when you own it.
Yeah.
It can't always be perfect to everybody.
Yeah.
But if you can tick the 75% sort of rule, I think, yeah, location is the big thing, whether it's near schooling and closeness to an office or CBD, or enough away from that that people feel that they're actually being able to disconnect a bit and exhale a bit as well.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting space because it is a bit of a everyone has their own wish list.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. That's the other thing I remember about Crown, just going back there for a moment, is that the display suite, it had a bit of tech in it and you could see the outlook from all different unit numbers.
Yes.
So if you were on floor 33,
yes,
the view out the window was different to the view from – say level 15.
Yeah.
And I thought the display suite was amazing, the way that you
the technology, to change the views.
Yeah.
I know, amazing, isn't it?
Amazing, amazing what you can do right now.
And that sort of space I think is really growing, isn't it? The virtual kind of aspect of things.
Yeah.
But there's nothing like walking through a home and feeling it.
Yeah.
And being able to sit in a chair and look. And to be honest, the country and the beach homes and those sort of things, that's where we have real quality time, I think, with our clients, because especially the country homes, we usually serve them a bit of lunch or make them a cup of tea or something like that and get them to sit. And when people sit like that, they don't tend to – when they inspect city places, it's in and out really because they're back to the office. When somebody gets in a car and drives a couple of hours to see something, they're more considered. They take more time and they actually relax and they open up more. So that's where a lot of our relationship building happens.
Yeah.
And that's why we enjoy the space, because that's then when we can actually understand how we can help them best, what other opportunities there will be to help them as well, rather than just that one-off property that they're looking at.
Car time, that is so valuable.
Yeah.
I think a lot of agents actually miss their car time these days with, you know, everything being online and stuff like that.
Agree. It's the good old face-to-face and it's the relationship. It's investing in that. And I think we can easily just be responsive to SMSs and emails and Insta. You know, I get a lot of messages through Instagram from quite well-known people who see something I like and can you send me some information? I don't want to be on your database. I just want information about this. And it's about respecting that.
Yeah.
So I think it's very easy to do the quick things, but people, I think, have forgotten to invest in the long-term game. And that's what we're in it for, the long-term game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We tracked you down again because I was keen to do an episode of the Leadership Diaries with you, which is where we ask leaders such as yourself questions to inspire other up-and-coming leaders. And I think your role and what you do is quite inspirational to a lot of people out there, actually not just women, but everybody. So these are just a series of questions about leadership and culture. So you ready to get into it?
I am.
All right. So what's the most important thing you're working on right now and how are you making that happen?
Oh, actually, there's probably two things. I think one is the direct listings I have in front of me, because it's really important for me, especially with deadlines on those, to get the great result for the client. But the other side of our business is the brand relationship side, and we've got our global wealth report about to happen. So a lot of it's being focused on those events that are coming up and private lunches and the people that we're involving in those. So it's a couple of things, the direct sales relationships plus the business side.
Yeah, and you really focus on what we would call in residential land dollar productive activities.
Yes.
So it's just really.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're the key things you start the day with. I think, you know, I've got a role where I juggle both.
Yeah.
But primarily, I mean, we all have KPIs.
Yep.
we're all there to transact. You know, the bottom line is to do that. But it's just how we do it is a little bit different from others.
Yeah, absolutely. That was going to be my next question.
Okay.
The first hour of your day, what does it look like and how does it go after that?
Well, the very first early hours, I do some fitness training.
Yep.
I start my day that way because that's my good mental health moment and it's my time to myself.
Yep.
Breakfast and out the door, I'm out the door. I'm an early morning person, so I fade at the end of the day. I'm not a night owl. So I try and do most of my – I've done my planning the night before, by the way, so I've got my list of what I need to do in the morning. So usually it's calls, connect with clients, those sort of things, overnight inquiries. And the morning is pretty much doing pretty much sales stuff. I've got from the relationship side of my business and the brand side, quite often I might have a lunch with clients or a lunch with providers and things like that. And then I guess the afternoons, no 2 days are really the same. It really is in what's in front of me and what I get thrown to me by others in the business as well. We do a lot of senior leadership work as well within the business. But I guess generally that sales inquiry and booking of inspections is running pretty much in the background all day. And then we may do those viewings. We work to our clients' timetable because they quite often aren't easy to get inspections around. So they might be at all different times of day and on Sundays. So we don't differentiate. It's about getting the client to the property when we can and working with our vendor in order to make that happen.
Can you name someone that has had a big impact on you as a leader?
I think I've been really lucky. I've had a few people in my career in real estate since I started. Probably one of the first was John McGrath when I worked with McGrath. So I started with Ray White up in the Northern Beaches, and then I moved across to McGrath. And I was with McGrath for quite a long time. And I was so inspired by him because he's industry leader. So that was an amazing part of my career. Since then, though, since I've moved over to the more corporate side of the business, I think I'm really lucky to have some really skilled, sensational women that work around me in very male-dominated sectors of construction or asset management, research, leasing, and, you know, just how they got there and what they fought through to get there without it being a gender war, you know, that they really had to step up, and they inspire me because I think residential property is quite women friendly, I think, and perhaps not all sectors are as friendly as others. But I think for the commercial side of the business, it's very, very dominated by men. And so for them to have flourished, we all support each other, which is really nice.
At Crown Again, I've mentioned Crown Again.
But, yeah. And that's a perfect example.
Well, there was a bunch of awesome women there from Knight Frank, all leaders, all very established, you know, in their different roles. And, you know, I was actually blown away by the number of women in the room.
Yes. And some of them have come over from our UK businesses. And I think because we're a private company, moving around the world is part of the opportunity that you have with Knight Frank. I personally have my hand up for Florence. We have an office there. I just think that would be wonderful.
One day.
The Italian I'll work on. But no, I think, you know, in all seriousness, we've got people who have been with the company a long time who understand what it is that makes Knight Frank special. And even though within Australia, Knight Frank is perhaps seen to the local market as being quite new, we've been around for 123 years and we've been in this space in the UK for that long. We sold Stonehenge, which to me is still an amazing thing. Not every agency can say that. Not that it's a residential home, but
but it's still a sale, and it's probably
It's remarkable because I think people might not know exactly what it is, but they know of Stonehenge, and I think it's, you know, so to have been around that long selling property says something that you know what you're doing, and so to be able to build that from scratch here in Australia and be part of something special is an extraordinary opportunity, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Where do great ideas in the business come from for you?
Oh, when I'm driving.
Yep.
Oh, that's my time. I sometimes put some music on, or sometimes I just totally turn it off. That's where all my thoughts kind of go a bit crazy. I'll tell you just a little story. A couple of days ago, I was up in the Hunter Valley looking at a beautiful property, and it's like something out of Tuscany. It's absolutely beautiful. Olive groves, vineyards, just lovely. And I was referred in there. A lot of our work is personal referrals.
Yep.
And I was referred in to meet these people, and it was just beautiful. And on the way back, I was already formulating the marketing campaign in my head. And then on the phone, I was talking to my assistant going, okay, write this down because I'm driving. But that's my kind of time. If I'm alone in the car, that, or sadly, probably just as I'm falling asleep at night, is, you know, I have a notebook by my bed.
Yeah.
It's just ideas come to you at random times. And I think because we can make all of our campaigns and films and things like that, we do quite bespoke, we have the opportunity to make them quite, we try and make them as engaging and as emotional as we possibly can, because it is about people and families. So we want to give that hook of a feeling of what it's like, you know, to live there, which you don't have the time to do that in volume-based real estate, local real estate. So that's why I enjoy this sector, I think.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting what you're saying there about in the car, because it just gives you a bit of a moment to step back while you're driving with you and the road.
Yes.
And I always find it hard to come up with great ideas when I'm constantly in front of the computer, tap, 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 and sometimes you just do need to get away.
You have to remove yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it might be you go for a run and it's just clearing your head and then things come into your mind, then it gives you a bit of clarity. Everyone's different, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. What is your favourite question to ask someone in a job interview?
Oh.
And what does the answer tell you about the person?
That's a good one. Look, I think what their dreams and aspirations are and what they'd actually like to get to. Some people might be afraid to tell you that because it might not be exactly what they're there to meet you for. But one thing we always try and do is give a pathway at Knight Frank, and hopefully it's within our business. But if not, I think personal growth is such a huge thing that we should all support and encourage people to actually voice some other things that they'd like to do. We're a really large agency, so we can actually facilitate pathways through all different sectors of our agency. So it's not a trick question by any means. But I think sometimes people are afraid to say things that they'd love to do because they think they might not get a role. But to me, actually showing that you're creative and you have those kind of dreams and thoughts is a good thing.
Yeah, I think. Absolutely.
Yeah, rather than a machine, you know, that you're a person that wants to grow. That's a good thing.
Yeah, totally. What is one characteristic that you think every leader should possess? That's a normal question, actually. So I'm going to ask you that. But I'm also going to say, what do you think is the most important characteristic if you are ambitious and you want to get to a position like yours?
Patience.
Yeah.
Because it might not be directly in front of you, but don't give up on your dreams if you know what you want to do. And there's lots of ways to get there, I think. Look for other avenues. There's always opportunities. And I actually say that to my children. Be aware of the opportunities that are around you, because sometimes we can be so blinkered because we're so focused on what we're doing that we're not aware of other doors opening around us that could be potentially amazing opportunities. So I think that. I think as a leader, I think these days, to be honest, it's about listening and understanding your colleagues and other people in the business. At the moment, and I'm sure you hear this a lot as well, there's so much discussion about mental health and wellness. And you know, we have a wellness, lovely wellness room in our office where you can retreat to and personally never been there, but I know it's there. I did a conference call in there once because it was the only room available.
It'd be nice and quiet too. No, I do remember when I worked for PwC, which is not that long ago, we had a meditation room.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So that's good. But I think there's initiatives coming through the business of people being able to step out, take a little bit longer leave and to be rewarded for the hard work you're putting in. And I think sometimes it's just being able to understand what your colleagues are going through or what people that are perhaps might be new in the business are going through and maybe struggling a bit and seeing that before they fall apart. And I don't know if perhaps that's more of a woman, more nurturing thing, because I'm a mum and I kind of like to nurture people and kind of, you know, bring them along with me, I suppose. We're a new team, and we're building, and we've had new people join us again this year. We want everyone to be a success because then we're all successful. And I think we're really lucky that all of this that have gathered together know each other. And so we've started with friendship. And that's really important. None of us are cutting each other out of deals. We're working together on deals. And that was all part of the interview process, as it were, coming in, is that we are working collectively together as a team. We're not working against each other. And that's really rare in agency. So we've been very slow to hire because we wanted the right people sitting at the table. Everyone we've got in our business is a great performer and they know what they have to do. We don't have to micromanage. I don't like being micromanaged.
Yeah.
If they're struggling, that's different about helping and assisting. But I think it is about being aware of that. And as being a leader or as a manager in a team, it is about being aware of others as well as yourself, isn't it?
Yeah. So, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like you say, I think rather than cutting the pie up, it's about making a bigger pie.
Exactly. And some deals, like we had one just before Christmas where the whole team actually is sharing in the fees because everyone was important at some level. So it's a shared fee, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we've had a few of those. And we've even had our assistant, admin assistant, is actually a licensed agent as well. And she's got a Mandarin speaking background. So she's our translator. And we have an Asian markets team as well. We're really lucky with language.
Yeah.
But she's able to do direct translations with buyers, with vendors. So she gets part of the fee, you know. So it's about everybody sharing in that so we can all feel that we're part of something. And I think when you're building something new, feeling part of that and owning that is really important.
Yeah, that's a real culture thing. Like, yeah. I know which direction I'm heading.
Well, that's right. But also you feel a sense of the success. So it's not just due to one person. Because I have to say, I've been in agencies in the past where there might be one or two huge performers and everyone else feels very, very minimalized in the company. And that big performer might not always be the nicest person either, but they write the most fees.
Mm.
And it totally changes the energy within the business.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with these days is, you know, someone doesn't quite fit the culture of the business, but they write huge numbers. What do you do?
Yes, yes.
You know, like that's probably one of the biggest leadership questions.
Oh, absolutely. And also the other thing is how destructive that person can be within the business to others. You know, I mean, there's the lovely old slow to hire, quick to fire.
Yep, yep.
It's because if somebody doesn't fit in, it can ruin it for everyone else. And, you know, I mean, as agents, we're 24/7 really.
Yep.
We live and breathe the space. If you have somebody who's destructive within it, it can cost the whole team.
Yeah.
And then you lose good people and you lose good young people coming in because what's the point? What's my pathway here if it's going to be about this? So,
yeah. And you need young people coming in too for longevity. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But also I think for fresh ideas, because we've done something one way for a long time doesn't mean to say it's the best way.
Yeah.
It's the easiest way. And sometimes, you know, it's the path of least resistance, isn't it? It's the one we always take rather than consider, oh, I haven't actually thought of doing it that way before.
Yeah.
That inquiring young mind, I think, is a good thing in a team.
Yeah.
Or somebody who's new to the industry, who hasn't done property before, no matter what their age is, just saying, why do you do it that way? Why don't you do it this way?
I couldn't agree with you more. I love young ideas. I mean, I've got an 18-year-old who's just started university, so she's got all the ideas.
Yes,
like,
of course.
I call her our business futurist.
Yes. I'd say mine are in their 20s and it's different. You know, I was telling a story yesterday about actually when I was pregnant with my oldest son, who's now nearly 27, there weren't mobile phones around then.
Yeah.
So because people were asking me, what did you look like pregnant at this time?
Yeah.
I haven't got a photo of that. Whereas now there are photos of everything, aren't there? So
yeah, I'm glad.
Not always good.
there are not too many photos of me either, which I'm pretty happy about. Okay, a couple of last questions. What advice would you give to your younger self?
To hang in there, because I think when I first started work, I started in an admin role and I worked as a personal assistant and executive assistant, and I quite liked that. But I thought that was my lot, really. I didn't really look beyond that. And maybe that was a generational thing as well. But now when I listen to my children talk about their plans, you can keep changing your career constantly.
Mm.
And it's not seen as a bad thing now, whereas before that was seen as unsettling if you changed, you know. So, just to hang in there and evolve because, you know, I'm in my 50s now and I love what I do.
Yeah.
But it's taken me a while to get here. And, you know, I wouldn't have changed the pathway either because it made me what I am now, and I think I'm good at what I am now because of all those different things I've done.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
Yes.
Are there any books or resources which you would recommend that have made an impact on you?
Oh, look, I'm a big reader and I'm always reading quite diverse things. And actually I have my personal trainer who I see, or fitness coach, he's constantly sending me sales training books, and a lot of them are the same ones. A lot of them get regurgitated, don't they? But I love Melinda Gates's recent book. I've been reading that, and Warren Buffett and things like that. Those kind of people, I think, have always...
Classics.
Yeah, yeah, they really are, aren't they?
Yeah.
But now it's more, I suppose, we have a lot of young wealth clients and young entrepreneurs, and being in their space and seeing what they're doing and reading some of their material, and a lot of it's very tech-based and not really my thing, but it does open up how you see the world, their interest in authentic ideas of what they want to hold and own and things like that. Yeah, look, I guess there's no real one book I'm reading at the moment. I've got half a dozen on my bedside table that I read of different things, and I'm big into TED Talks and things as well, and so listen to a lot of podcasts and things as I'm traveling around.
Yeah.
And I just try and keep it sort of a bit diverse. Rather than reading industry-based books, which it's really easy just to do that.
Yeah.
Just try and change it up a bit.
Yeah. Sometimes you learn more from outside.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And your kids, you know, on what they're doing and who they're seeing, and reminding you not to be, you know, ageist or sexist about things. You know?
Yeah, they're good. They're good. They're good for that too. Well, Deborah, I'd like to thank you for joining us. It's been amazing having a chat to you and taking a bit of a journey through some of your luxury listings at the moment. if there was one thing that you would like people to remember from listening to this, what would it be?
I suppose just remember to look after the client and listen to the client. I think in our space, a lot of people forget that. They think about the deals rather than the clients. So maybe work on the relationship side of your business. I think it's really important.
That's great advice. Deborah Cullen, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate from Elite Agent. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit eliteagentelevate.com.